The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into Hour 3. It's a delight to do so with one of my favorite people in the whole wide world, and that's John Shattuck. Congressman Shattuck used to represent Arizona's old 4th Congressional District here in the central Phoenix area and parts surrounding. He is the head of Shattuck Associates, Shattuck and Associates, and it's a delight to have him in studio. We usually have him here Wednesdays as we drive home when he is in town. It was a delight to have you at our event last night as well, John.
Great event.
Everyone kind of swarms to you. They miss you in Congress. They miss you in public service. But you do a public service by helping out so many people and mentoring so many people. You asked me, I said to young David something, and you said, I'd like to be called young John. And I said, well, how old are you? And you said, the question to ask, how did you framed it wonderfully? You said, if you didn't know your age, what age would you think you are? That's a fun question. Did I cast that right?
So I was walking / jogging my neighborhood 3 days ago or so, and I run into the other guy, older guys in my neighborhood, and there are plenty of older guys in my neighborhood. When Shirley and I moved in, we were the youngest couple in the entire neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we went to the neighborhood party, and we were younger than everybody at the neighborhood party by 20 years.
Uh-huh.
Now Shirley and I go to the neighborhood party, and we're older than everybody by at least 20 years. So I'm walking by, and this guy's mowing his lawn, and he's 80 plus.
Uh-huh.
And we're chatting, and age comes up. I'm telling him I'm trying to stay in shape. And he says, we start talking generally about age, and he says, well, John, the way I look at it is I use this question, which is, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you are?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a great framing.
It took me about 10 minutes to answer it, and it was, how low do I think I can get away with it?
Yeah.
Until I said to myself, 45.
How old do you think you are if you didn't know? How old would you think you were?
I kid you, 45.
45.
Interesting. Fortunately, I don't feel different than that in terms of energy level or appetite for life.
Yeah.
So
here's how the world.
Why not do it?
Here's how the world will stay on its axis. Here's how we keep the world in equipoise.
Okay.
You think you would be 45.
Right.
I think I'd be about 85. I'll balance it out.
There we go.
Were you born in the right time? In the right era?
Absolutely.
Or are you nostalgic and all that? But you were in a great era. You lived in a great era.
I love the era.
You were a high school student in the 60s. That's a great time.
It was a fantastic time to be in the high school. It was a fantastic time to be an American. I think I would be in fear if I were in high school today.
Yeah.
And we had no fear. I mean,
I'd be in fear.
Grade school, we had a little bit of fear because we thought the Soviets were going to nuke us. And the debate was, well, is anybody in your neighborhood building a bomb shelter? And the truth is, in our neighborhood, not 2 miles from here, one family built an underground nuclear shelter.
We had one.
Yeah.
We didn't build it. My parents bought a house in 1961-ish that was half completed, and it had a bomb shelter.
Yeah.
And it became just storage.
This house became famous in the neighborhood because the people who owned it literally built themselves an underground bomb shelter.
It's funny what we thought we could do.
Whoa,
in those
it
days.
Was like,
it's
oh
really
my God.
Odd.
Yeah.
So, what was, you said something interesting, and I'm consumed with working on behalf of our youth about you'd be terrified to be in high school today. I would too. And I don't know that I'd get out. I was kind of wild. But wild then is different than wild now.
Absolutely.
And wild in your day would have been a degree less than that, probably. I mean, what's the worst you did? Broke curfew cruising central with Steve Twist or
no,
what?
No.
Eric Coyle's ice cream.
A lot of things.
Stealing Bob's Big Boy off the top of the roof.
We did stuff I can't admit.
Oh, come on. I think the statute of limitations is probably wrong. But that was a thing, cruising central, right?
Yeah, cruising central was a big deal. And specifically, going to Bob's Big Boy
sometime
that evening.
Mary Coyle ice cream.
Mary Coyle ice cream. And I actually got, I think I could go back in the public records of the City of Phoenix Police Department and prove that I cruised Central.
Oh, could you?
Yes. Because, first of all the Camelback and all the Central High School kids did, but so did North kids and, and Alhambra and you name it. But the public record I would have is that we were cruising south on Central one time, probably in my pickup truck, because I drove a pickup truck all the time, all my life.
Still.
Yeah. Yep. And we got to the corner of Central and McDowell, which is, of course, the northeast corner was and is the Phoenix Library. On the southwest corner, there was a Blakely gas station.
Okay.
And you couldn't turn left, so I turned into the Blakely gas station and came out, back out, and a policeman stopped me and cited me for having tried to avoid the stoplight, which, of course, is against the law. You can't go on the private property and then back onto a public street to avoid a streetlight.
Right.
And I had done that. And so I got stopped and I got a ticket and had to explain it to my dad. And in the end, I had to pay it.
Yeah.
So
is that the worst?
No. We're not talking about
Were you
about
guys
the worst.
Allowed to drink beer in high school or not really?
Oh, no.
But there was beer.
Allowed?
Well, was there was an age limit at 18 or something probably, or 16? I don't know.
Oh, no, it definitely wasn't 16. Okay. It was 18 or 21. I think back
18.
Then it was 21.
It was even in the
60s.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
I just
beer?
Have this
Are you
image.
Kidding?
What was your first concert? Did you ever go to a concert? What was your first concert?
I can't even remember them.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember this, but the old timers were, there's an ongoing battle between Crux and Kriz.
Yeah.
And you were either a Crux guy or a Kriz guy.
Yeah.
And I was a Crux guy.
Okay.
But we did a lot of things.
Well, I had Marshall Trimble in here about two Fridays ago, or last Friday maybe it was. You know Marshall a little bit?
Of course, yep.
And he was telling me about a concert he went to at a venue on Central where he saw Johnny Cash in the 50s.
There you go.
And I don't know why.
That would have been ahead of me.
Yeah, of course. But I'm just thinking what it would have been like to be on Central to see what. What do you got, David? You want to weigh in? Looks like you've got something on this.
I love all of these stories of the past. This is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, Blakely Oil, that's dating you, John. I have some of their china.
Oh, yeah.
They gave out china.
They gave out china?
You don't know
and,
about this, Seth.
Uh-uh.
Oh, and they gave away china and Blakely tumblers, which were big, tall
glasses.
See,
he'd be 90. He'd be young David would be 90. If I'm 85, he's 90.
I'm mentally 105.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a gas station. Blakely, they gave out coupons, and you could collect on some china pieces.
The china pieces had cactus on them, I think. And the tumblers definitely had various, you know, a saguaro cactus or a, what was the other one?
Maybe a barrel or a saguaro or something
choya,
like that. Or a choya
yeah.
jumping
choya,
cactus.
Yeah, choya, yep. Yeah. Yeah.
No kidding. Would they have been DeGrazia?
I don't know where they actually 18th. Came from. They might have been.
Maybe I'll bring one in next Wednesday.
Young David, do you know the story of DeGrazia?
Uh-uh.
Oh, take a look. Artist, take a look. You'll like it. You'll like what he did on South Mountain. All right. John Shattuck.
Great stuff.
We got to talk. I want to talk to you about the media story a little bit. Yeah, at the event we were at together last night, this question comes up, which is, given all the media bias, how, I mean, I've said for years it's amazing. You know, we always complain about a lost election here and there. When you look at the culturally, you look at the education system or Hollywood, my gosh, professional athletics, media. What am I missing? It's amazing a Republican ever gets elected anywhere to anything. But the media has now taken any vestige, any even symbolic gesture of bipartisanship or neutrality off the table with the latest episode.
Or truth.
And we'll come to truth in a moment. Let me set this up, and we'll probably do more of it during on the other side of this break just because of the time. But so Ronna McDaniel gets hired by NBC on Friday, and she's the former chair of the RNC, the most recently ousted chair of the RNC. It's not a dirty little secret, but it is kind of funny that, you know, the base of the party kind of turned against her anyway. She was not considered kosher anymore with the MAGA crowd, which was part of the reason she was asked to leave by Donald Trump. So she's now already, you know, kind of, I don't know what you would not call her. Anyway, you would not call her a base Republican anymore, but she is the former chair of the RNC. NBC hires her as a commentator or contributor. They put her on a Sunday morning news show, their flagship show, Meet the Press. Kristen Welker, who hosts it, gives her a really tough interview. And then they do a commercial break, and they do an entire panel about how NBC shouldn't have hired her. The next segment is an entire panel of four people where they just talk about how NBC shouldn't have hired her. Then Rachel Maddow and Mika Brzezinski weigh in on Monday, and by last night, she was fired. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about all that. John Shattuck is my guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Shattuck is my guest, head principal founder of Shattuck Associates, LLC, consulting and legal services, former congressman. Was that Bob Dylan? Whose version was that? Peter, Paul, and Mary on a Bob Dylan song? Did Steve Twist ever drag you to a Bob Dylan concert?
Oh, of course.
Of course. Okay. Yeah.
I don't like to admit it.
I know. None of it. Turns out he and I were at the same Bob Dylan concert before we knew each other. 1987 at the Madhouse on McDowell. You were probably there, too.
I might have been. I might have been there with him.
Yeah, probably.
He was over the top.
Still is. Okay, so NBC has now since fired Ronna McDaniel because the internal contributors couldn't handle that she was there. The head of NBC, the chairman, Cesar Conde, it's close to a name you and I both know. It's not the same guy. Cesar Conde puts out a staff memo that says no organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, become clear that this appointment undermines that goal. Since when does a newsroom, John, have to be politically aligned?
I was going to say, that's insane.
Aligned?
Yeah. Cohesive and aligned.
Aligned on
so
what?
We got to be leftist in every way, or we got to be woke in every way, and we can't allow anybody in the room that isn't, that doesn't fit that. And that's just insane. One would say no true newsroom can be aligned, because if they're allowed to let their bias enter the discussion and they don't have people from each side of the discussion, then they aren't a news organization. It is stunning. You were going to ask.
Yeah, how we can win in this environment. The New York Times can't allow Tom Cotton. CNN can't air Donald Trump. MSNBC won't air Donald Trump. Is it okay? Can we still win?
Absolutely, we can still win. And actually, thinking people realize this actually is proof of their fraud, I guess is the word I would use. The reality is they can't defend their position on all issues. They are afraid to have to defend their view. They can't find intellectual support for at least much of it, maybe all of it. And so what they do is they decide, well, rather than have to confront that the way we'll say Bill Buckley did, or the way we'll say even Cronkite or, you know, kind of Brinkley and Huntley, we won't take them on. What we'll do is we'll decide, number one, they are evil. If they believe what they say, they must be evil. And good people hate evil, so we'll hate evil. And so they decide, well, we have to hate Ronna McDaniel, and we have to suffocate the other side. Give them no air. So if they can get a Republican to moderate or drift to their side and play them, use them to advance their position, they'll tolerate some of those Republicans. But Ronna McDaniel just was a bridge too far. And obviously, they have accumulated that group. Who was just on?
Yeah. Rachel Maddow.
Rachel Maddow. Yeah, right. They have accumulated so much power and influence
They think they're in charge.
They are in charge. She just proved they in charge. They were in charge. They could go to the bosses of the network and say, "We will not tolerate Ronna McDaniel." So fire her. And the management does, because all their money comes from leftists and woke people, and they're afraid of them.
These corporations are so large now, CNN and NBC and the like, that it's, I suppose, possible their network television can be a lost leader, so to speak, that maybe they can afford not to make money. I know they would rather make money, but maybe they can afford to. And maybe their mission really is to – I mean, they are telling half the country, we don't care what you think. They are telling them that. They are telling Republicans not to tune in.
Absolutely. They do not want us to tune in. They do, if they wanted to bring people over, they'd have different points of view and try to win the argument. They have no desire to try to win the argument. They want to control us.
It's such a weird thing to me. When I started radio in 2004 with Bill Bennett in Washington, D.C., someone had an ad idea. I think I can say this without embarrassing anyone. Someone had an ad idea for a billboard that was, you know, a picture and a promo, and it said, "The left will hate this," or "The left will hate it." And we said, no, why would you advertise that? Why would you want to immediately cut off 50% of your potential audience? Now, anyway, it seems to me NBC and CNN is going down that route. And I agree with everything you said about being able to go around and over and under it. But there is something that still picks at me, and it's this, John, because you probably suffer what I suffer. People like to talk politics with you.
Really?
And they're not all Republicans, right?
Nope.
They're not always Republicans.
Nope.
And when they come to those conversations, the problem I have, and this is what picks, is their entire information basis of the political conversation they want to engage you in is based on only watching CNN or reading the Washington Post or the Arizona Republic. They don't know half of what they should, and a quarter of what the 50% is that they do know is wrong anyway. It makes the conversation you and I have at an individual and everyone in this audience who has the same problem, it makes conversations really difficult.
It makes it very difficult. What bothers you the most is they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And they have no intellectual interest in discovering what that is or in doing inquiry or research to find out, well, wait a minute, why does the other side say this? I guess
they have a ready answer, and it's that we're fascists or racists or bigots, because that's what they're told, and they don't know what they don't know because they think CNN wouldn't lie to them.
That's a rationalization. There's a local reporter that I got in a discussion with once. There was a bill before Congress to raise the minimum wage, and he jumped me because I was opposed to it, and just in my face. Well, how in God's name could you oppose an increase in the minimum wage? Right. And I tried to engage him in an intellectual discussion, which was, do you know that there are consequences of raising the minimum wage beyond what you think is helping people? In point of fact, if you do an analysis or look at the studies, you know, it is an absolute fact that many of the people for whom you would otherwise raise the minimum wage will not do better. They will do worse.
They'll be looking for work.
Because their job will be mechanized, and they will lose their job because it's more economic to do it with a machine. Not a shred of interest in that. It literally was something he could not grasp.
You're going to prove it to him with California. April 1st, they start at $20 an hour. John Shattuck and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Shattuck is my guest. Congressman Shattuck is my guest, head of Shattuck Associates, LLC. John, one more point on this dismissal of Ronna McDaniel. And I don't carry a huge brief for her. It's just the message it conveys and the proof it establishes. Yeah,
the proof that they don't pretend
to be biased. Yeah, they don't care to pretend anymore.
They will literally chase off deny employment to somebody who thinks slightly different than they do.
Yes. And there's one other element to this that has not been seized on, which is for every Sunday morning guest on these shows, I'm going to guess not a single Sunday goes by without someone lamenting division in America. We're such a divided country. Washington is so divided. The country is so divided. This fuels it. This fuels the division. This is probably the greatest hub, if you will, of that division, because what these major networks are doing are preventing people from understanding that there is another side.
Absolutely.
That there is another side, and just because it's the other side, it's not ipso facto bigoted. It's not ipso facto racist. It's not, as this reporter thought of you, someone who hates the poor. There is. I was a leftist until I ran into Harry Jaffa and Claremont. You know, I just had never heard an intellectual conservative argument or case or analysis on anything before. In fact, I didn't even think conservatives could be intellectual. I thought conservatives were Neanderthals. That's you get raised with, you know, the New Republic and stuff like Mother Jones. That's what you think. So thank God for Harry Jaffa. But
thank God for Harry Jaffa.
On a lot of fronts. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is what fuels division. And the college campuses are doing the same thing because they are just churning out socialists. And they are not giving tenure or tenure track positions or even instructor positions to people who think just a little bit differently than Claudine Gay at Harvard.
They won't allow even the slightest criticism or analysis of socialism or communism.
Right.
That's simply not to be tolerated. Somebody might decide, well, wait a minute, show me where socialism has really worked, where it's benefited more people in a given society than capitalism. No, we can't.
ASU has Lenin celebration days.
Does it really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
They have Lenin celebration
days. Makes me a proud wildcat.
They have a Karl Marx club at ASU. Could you imagine?
I can't even imagine. But then, you know, so that's how threatened they are by intellectual inquiry. But then the next step is, of course, that the end justifies the means. So if you don't, if you are advancing their view of the world, then lying or omitting accurate information is okay. I'm doing a good thing. I was just talking with a candidate who is a conservative, and I said to the candidate, in an audience where the public can listen, you can never say anything conservative, even if it's at all controversial, because the left, if you say 20 things and one of them is slightly conservative, they'll ignore the 20 things on which the public would agree with you. And the only thing they'll write about is the one thing you said that was a little bit edgy. And so you literally cannot go out there and talk. You know, for years, for example, you couldn't talk about choice in education. Yeah. Oh, that means they hate children.
Right. They hate public schools. They
hate public
children.
Schools.
They
absolutely
hate minorities.
Yep.
Yep.
Now, you could say 20 other things. Education is the single most important thing in all the world.
Yep.
We need to pay teachers more and on. That's good. But if at one point you said, and, you know, I also support choice, boom, you'd open the door.
Here's a life hack for people that want to get things published in the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Arizona Republic. When you write something that you have a serious view on, make sure to put in stuff that you don't think is very serious that they will cut out so they keep the serious stuff. You can turn that on them sometimes once in a while. John Shattuck is my guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back. Congressman John Shattuck is my guest, and we have to address this, of course. John Shattuck himself, a happy warrior. There aren't a lot of happy warriors in politics. I think the original appellation went to Al Smith and then maybe Hubert Humphrey and forward. Jack Kemp was considered one of them. There were a few. Joe Lieberman was considered a happy warrior. And, of course, he passed away today, as we mentioned earlier in the show. I knew him a little bit. Do you, young David, you don't know this story. I'm gonna have John Shattuck talk about him in a second here. The Democratic Party, couldn't handle him. Because he dissented from their leftism, so they ran a candidate against him and primaried him in Connecticut. So he ran independent and won, one of those rare cases. But you don't know how he became elected senator in the first place, young David.
I don't think I do.
It was something called Buck Pack. Can you use your imagination?
Buck Pack. It either has
something to do with deer. We're in Connecticut.
Or
Connecticut.
The esteemed Buckley family.
William Buckley could not stand Lowell Weicker, the Republican.
Ah.
So he put together Buck Pack to support the Democrat Joe Lieberman, who was more conservative than Lowell Weicker, the Republican.
I did not know that.
Is the origin story of Joe Lieberman being elected in 1988. What would you say
Absolutely
about Joe?
Believable.
What would you say about Joe Lieberman, John? You must have known him a little bit.
I didn't ever know him personally. I just watched him from afar and admired him because, unlike the Democrats we were just discussing, he would have reason behind his position and would welcome a debate over those reasons and arguments with anybody and would substantiate and defend his position and do a fantastic job of it. And I think that's why William F. Buckley or others would admire, did admire him. I admired him. I was once, I was a rabid John Kyle supporter for a while, and I admired the fact that John Kyle and Joe Lieberman were obviously very close, and you could
see. They did a lot on national defense together.
And you could see their admiration for each other because they were both intellectual believers in addition to being successful politicians, but they could intellectually defend their positions. And, you know, there are lots of Democrats that I served with that I respected. There were lots and lots of Democrats that I served with that I did not respect. Many who were just mean and who didn't care about truth or intellectual discussion of any issue. They were just rabid partisans. And Joe Lieberman was the polar opposite of that. He was a guy that could defend every single position he had intellectually and would enjoy doing it. And you'd enjoy, you could see that you could, in, that you, if you were doing that argument or having that discussion with him, you would enjoy it because the basis was respect and the basis was reason and logic. And he was just a Democrat you could definitely admire.
I remember when Jack Kemp died, someone said a part of the Republican Party died when Jack Kemp died. A big part of the Democratic Party died with Joe Lieberman's passing today. A party.
I was going to say, is it a part of today's Democratic Party that died?
It's the last vestige of yesterday's Democratic Party.
Yesterday's Democratic Party.
It's the last vestige of the John Kennedy.
You would never have found him embracing socialism or communism.
No, this is why they ran an independent against him when he was running for re-election, and then he clobbered him in the general. And I think
the other guy like that is Scoop Jackson.
Yeah, that was a party, Moynihan for a while maybe.
Yep.
This was a party that, you know, a lot of conservatives could get behind, you know, but in some respects foolishly too. I remember in reading in 1976 a lot of the term neocon has taken on a different meaning, but there was a neoconservative movement in the 70s that was really mostly about social and domestic policy. It later became a different thing, but it was mostly about social and domestic policy. And there were a bunch of Republican neocons who supported Jimmy Carter because they thought he was kind of that ilk. And Gerry Ford kind of was of the Lowell Weicker ilk, if we're being honest. And I remember they thought they would be staffing the Carter administration. And they got some ambassadorship to Micronesia and wrote to Daniel Moynihan, who said, not even Macronesia. Not even Macronesia. But it was that period of time that Joe Lieberman would have come out of, you know, that kind of Democratic Party. Robert Kennedy made Jr., the son, made some feints in that direction with his Super Bowl ad that he was trying to reinvoke the party of his dad and his uncle. It's very clear with his vice presidential pick and the way he unveiled that announcement, that's not where he's going.
No.
He is going left.
Yep.
And that's the end of that party, my friend. I mean, people thought Joe Biden, wrongly, I mean, was going to, you know, save the party from the Bernie Sanders wing. He's just part and parcel.
He's embraced and furthered the Bernie Sanders ring.
Yeah.
A friend of mine asked me today, he said, well, who really is running the country?
Yeah.
And I had this whole theory about if the elected official herself or himself is not engaged, as one might speculate that the current president is engaged, then the people behind him whose names are never known get to set policy to the extreme. For the left, it's to the extreme left from where Biden himself, if he were intellectually engaged, might be. But I think you can make an argument that when people listened to Joe Biden's inaugural speech, they thought, hey, he might do that.
Yep.
And wow, that might be good for the country.
Yep.
And then he completely disappointed because the people that actually control his policy are not close to being uniters. They've dedicated their lives to being radical dividers.
Yep.
And unfortunately, since they're not accountable, nobody knows their names. Nobody knows, you know, who their employers have been or what they've spent their life doing. And they know they've got the secrecy of being hidden.
Yep.
They can advocate the most extreme policies they want.
Yep.
And there are no consequences for them. And important, sadly, there are very few consequences for Mr. Biden because people go, well, that's not really him. He's this kind of you know, charming, you know, befuddled old man.
Yeah.
So we can't blame him, but we can't blame the people behind him who are setting the policy. Well, we better. It's not about the candidates. It's about where's the country going? And we look at the reality, for example, this friend said, well, he was concerned that Trump couldn't win. And I said, yeah, but look at all of the Americans who are minority Americans who are now saying, I'm voting Trump because, and you hear them say, because I was doing better under Trump than I am now. And I'm voting my pocketbook.
Yeah. When you say, were you better off 4 years ago, it's not about another administration. It's about the guy who can ask it.
Yep.
John Shattuck, it's so good to see you. Thank you, brother, for coming by.
Glad to be here.
As always. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, portions of which are brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They offer up a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. YRefi is located here, headquartered here in Phoenix. Their offices are on Chauncey Lane. You can visit with them. I've been there any number of times. No sales pitch, and you won't be asked to sign a thing. If you don't visit them in person, check them out online at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then R-E-F-Y.com, or call them at 888-YREFI-24. With YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. And best of all, as I say, up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. investyrefi.com. I just think about that point John Shattuck was making in the previous segment about the people who run our government with names that are never known. And it reminded me of an important point. You know, we just celebrate. We should have commemorated earlier in the week the 41st anniversary of the Evil Empire speech. I was referencing it last night at our event. Reagan quoted in that speech from the introduction to C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters, and he didn't do the full quote. I'll give you the full quote from C.S. Lewis. He wrote, "I like bats much better than bureaucrats. I live in the managerial age in a world of administration. The greatest evil is not now done in those sordid dens of crime that Dickens loved to paint. It is not done even in concentration camps and labor camps. In those we see their final result. But it is conceived and ordered, moved, seconded, carried and minuted in clean, carpeted, warmed and well-lit offices by quiet men with white collars and cut fingernails and smoothly shaven cheeks who do not need to raise their voices. Hence, naturally enough, my symbol for hell is something like the bureaucracy of a police state or the offices of a thoroughly nasty business concern. The only thing that's different now, folks, because it has gotten worse, is they don't have white collars anymore, and they don't have cut fingernails, and they don't have smoothly shaven cheeks. Some of their collars are white. A lot of them aren't. And some of them may shave. A lot of them don't. But you take the point. Quiet men and women. Lewis was on to it early. He knew what he was talking about. Until tomorrow, God bless you all. Thank you for being with us. I'm Seth, and on behalf of David and the team, class is dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.